and welcome back to United Masterclass, a tactical podcast about Manchester United. I'm your host, Hayden Rabani, and I am joined, as always, by Rob Blanchett. Rob, United have beaten Wolves 2-0 at home. That's a great result considering what we've seen in the last couple of weeks. That's one step closer to Champions League football. I know we don't want to say that Champions League football should be the target every single year, but for Ten Hag's development and the project, it's super important. Marcus Rashford's absence, I think United did really well to win the game. Goals by Martial and the returning Garnacho put the smiles back on our faces. And that's a really, really good win considering it's getting a little bit, over the last few weeks, a little bit kind of squeaky bum time. Liverpool in good form. United's form, played a lot of games. There's a lot of factors here as to why United have been struggling. But while the performances aren't perfect, I think that was a really good result.
Really good result. Like, all it means now, Haydar, is just win some games. Like, it is as simple as that. So that's 3 points out of the nine that you need. You now need 6 points out of the next nine. So this is all simple mathematics for people and for the football team. And what we're seeing is that Man United, yes, are crawling over the line. But if you get Champions League football, no one will care. This is not about coming into form in the last five games of the season, like, say, Liverpool are. If you can do what you do and just be professional and kind of just take the sting out of the problems, which is, you know, we've seen with United the last few weeks, you know, against Brighton and teams like that, where you've just not had enough in the tank for whatever reason, you've just now got to go and beat these teams. These teams that you're playing, Haydar, are not as good as you. You know they're not as good as you. They're mid-table teams at best. So go and make sure they look like mid-table teams, because what United have done the last few weeks is made teams look much better than they really are.
100%. And I think they're all teams that don't really have much to play for anymore. You think about Chelsea, I mean, a shocking season, not much to play for. Fulham as well had a good season, but again, going to the last game of the season, and Bournemouth as well away. But United should be winning their home games. I mean, that's a matter of it. I mean, United should go and win all of these games now going into the end of the season. But they should be winning those home games. And the home form is really, really good. The away form is concerning. You know, you look at United, I don't think they've beaten anyone in the top nine, which is very, very concerning. But you look at that home form, and that home form is really good. And I am confident going into these games now that United can do it. Going away, I wouldn't have been as confident. But today, you know, Rob, we will talk about the game overview. We'll talk about United actually slowing the tempo down against Wolves. And I think that was interesting because there have been issues playing out from the back. And we will talk about that. I think we do know the overall overarching issues that Ten Hag has. And unfortunately, he can't really solve that without additions in the summer. We'll talk about Wan-Bissaka's improvement as well. And I'm sure that, you know, you'll enjoy that section as well, because you were sort of championing him over Dallo, and we'll talk about that a little bit. We'll talk about Antony, and then we'll also talk about Garnacho's impact. He came on and showed us exactly what we've been missing actually off the bench. United's bench has been a little bit, due to injuries, has been quite weak, and they haven't had many game changes. And we'll talk about why Garnacho's little impact is something we've seen a lot this season. But as always, guys, give us a follow on @MayUnitedMC and give Rob a follow on @_Rob_B. Let's jump into it now, Rob. And we've got the graphic up from SofaScore as usual. And Man United played, I would say it was a 4-3-3 rather than a 4-2-3-1. We saw Luke Shaw return at left back. And that was really good to see, because we have actually seen United have lost that, you know, that threat going forward, especially on the left flank when Malasia played there. And even Dallo to an extent, you know, I know that Ten Hag did do that a few times. And it worked pretty well against Forest when we lost our show. But it's great to see Luke Shaw back there on that left flank. And Rafa Varane back in centre-back with Lindelof, which was interesting. So obviously Harry Maguire still kind of out of favour. I thought we might have seen Maguire, but it was great to see Varane back in. And Wan-Bissaka playing at right-back. Casemiro and Eriksen, United's first-choice midfield with Bruno Fernandes. And then Sancho replacing Rashford on the left. Antony, and then Anthony Martial as well. So strong side. I'd actually say with the current injuries, you know, with Rashford out, I know Sabitzer's out, but this is actually United's strongest 11. And I think what was quite interesting was that I felt that as soon as Varane was back, I mean, he marshals that defence really, really well. I think he defends spaces very, very well as well. And I felt so calm, because I just thought, you know what, Rafa's back now. And I haven't felt like that with the defence since Lissandro's been injured. But I also think throughout the team that radiated that the leader of the defence is back. And I think that United looked really comfortable. And we saw that Wolves didn't really have much of a sniff.
Yeah, to an extent, I agree with that. You know, I think that Varane is obviously a massive piece of this squad and for the starting 11, and having him back is definitely preferential over, say, Harry Maguire. I think it's been really key the last few weeks when seeing tactically what United have tried to do, that having Luke Shaw play inside, the issue is not Luke Shaw playing at centre-back. He's been brilliant at centre-back. The issue is what's going on at left-back. So we've tried different things. We've tried Malacia. We've tried Dalot. The truth is it doesn't work. They do it to a certain standard, but it's not top four standard. So having Luke Shaw back left-sided, I think, gives you balance on there. And you saw as well, like, we're going to talk a bit more about Aaron Wan-Bissaka later on, but both the fullbacks did their jobs yesterday, both going offensively and defensively, doing both of those jobs really well. And then you can allow Varane to be Varane and Lindelof to do Lindelof things and try and be a little bit more progressive from centre-back. I actually think that Varane was okay yesterday, but he did make one or two errors where you thought, when he's fit, he doesn't make those errors, you know, especially with the ball over the top of him or the ball coming down through the channel where he was a little bit kind of shaky and a bit like you thought, yeah, he's probably going to get pulled before the end of the game because he's not going to do 90 minutes here. So I wasn't surprised when Maguire came on. But just looking at the balance of the team, you know, all season long, Man United's best formation has been the 4-1-5. That's been when Casemiro sits as the number six and everyone goes and does other stuff in a press. Now, United didn't really press yesterday. What you saw was Eriksen kind of dipping in and out. So I think that's why it says 4-2-3-1 on the graphic here, because Eriksen was playing the number eight, but Eriksen was kind of being withdrawn and withheld. So Eriksen wasn't really joining any kind of press. He was letting Bruno go and do that. And likewise, Bruno wasn't really dropping into midfield. There was no Bruno coming into strange areas to pick the ball up when he's playing the 10. So this is, I think, I agree, this is our best team at the moment on our best formation. When, you know, you lose Marcus Rashford late in the day, this is probably the best you've got. And the most important thing here, Haydar, when you look at this, is Luke Shaw playing left back, but Bruno playing the 10. Like, Bruno can play the 8 and the 6-8 and everywhere else and wide and all these things, but he's just not brilliant at it. He's good at it and can have great games. But I think when you're looking at these last victories now that you need, Haydar, to be top four and to be the team you want to be, Bruno Fernandes has to be your creator at number 10, not Weghorst. So I think this is where the manager maybe has got it wrong in recent weeks. Again, maybe moving Bruno around. Bruno's not been great at the 10, but I thought yesterday he did the job of a 10. He was industrious. He was moving around in the right areas. He was creative. Maybe at times dilly-dallying on the ball again way too much, but I think that actually says a lot about how United were trying to play the game with a much slower pace than they used to.
I think you make a good point. I think what we've seen over the last few games is, I think Ten Hag probably does deserve some criticism, but it's very, very difficult. And the reason why I'll caveat that is because United played so many games. I think he didn't rotate much in the early parts of the season because United had to win games. And now we're in a situation where no team in Europe has played as many games as United. They've gone deep in every single competition they've been in. And they, oh, quite frankly, Rob, they don't have the squad. They don't have the depth. You know, you take out key players and there's a drop-off in quality is huge. And that's what United have to address in the summer. And hopefully, you know, with the ownership that gets sorted and there's funds to carry on Ten Hag's great, really good work this season, I'd say. I'd say almost great work. But I think when you look at this, this is why I give Ten Hag actually a lot of credit yesterday, because he kind of saw, he reined back on what he would usually do, you know, in terms of the pressing, because he knows that the players maybe don't have that energy in the tank. And I think United was solid yesterday, and I think that was the key. And it's about the results. And people can complain. I think people are very short-sighted. They complain about the performances, and they have done over the last, I mean, I would say since the Carabao Cup, actually, United have just got maybe a little bit progressively worse. I think Casemiro has had a different form. I think he was better yesterday, but he has had a different form. That has affected United. They've lost both centre-backs. But that's why I give Ten Hag credit, because although this is his philosophy, we know that he likes to play out from the back. He likes to have a full and strong pressing team. But actually, he reined it in, and United were more pragmatic. They were more solid. There was, I think, and you were there at the game, so you can probably back this up. But I thought that, you know, in the past few games, that the space between, let's say, the centre backs and Casemiro has been quite big, but I think they were very narrow yesterday and they closed the space. And so United were just solid. And I like that from us yesterday. And it's just about being professional and doing the business now. Just win the games, beat Chelsea, beat Bournemouth even away, or even just win your two home games and United get top four. And that's a great season. And then you go and you can focus on the FA Cup, win the FA Cup, two trophies and top four. And that's an amazing season for Ten Hag.
Yeah, look, you've got these next three games coming up now, three cup finals, as we keep saying. And there's no doubt that maybe besides Chelsea, you've got more talent available at your disposal to win a football match. So you have to rely on that. I think what we're actually seeing now at the moment is the real Ten Hag. So this feels a lot more like Ajax. So we've said last season, not last season, but obviously in pre-season, United tried to do a little bit of this possession stuff. It didn't work and they quickly ripped it up and threw it away and thought, right, we need to play on transition. We need to focus on a press. We need to kind of find ways to do that kind of way to win football matches. That was obvious why Man United did that. And it's worked all season long. This is why you're in the top four and in this conversation. But I actually think what we're seeing is something morphing towards what Manchester United will be under Ten Hag, because Ten Hag will undoubtedly, as a Dutch coach, want to keep the ball better than Man United do. So the issue at the moment, Haydar, is, yeah, great. Those are philosophical things that you will want to bring in the weeks and months ahead, but can you do it today? You just said there, you described Casemiro as having a dip in form. I would describe Casemiro as having a car crash in form. So Casemiro has gone from looking like the best number six in the world to looking kind of average, slow, over methodical, not reading the game properly, having good moments, but also having bad moments. And what you need from a Casemiro is no bad moments. So, this is the standard, isn't it? So that is going to be something that Manchester think about in the summer, because I think we are seeing now that Casemiro, in terms of whether it be his age or his, the gas tank or whatever you want to call it, there are definitely issues there, and you're going to have to address them in the future progressively, whether you bring in another number six or something like that to be able to give him a little bit of time off. He's had eight games off, hasn't he? And he still looks knackered. So that's a problem. But I think when you look at the United keeping the ball, if you had Martinez in the team here, I think this all looks a lot more smoother. Yeah, because Martinez can progressively bring the ball out, can make that pass into the six, into the eight. And then really, you're not relying on Lindelof and Varane to do it as much. I think so yesterday. The defence did play well. I see in the comments, some comments saying that the defence played well. I agree with that overall. They kind of starved Wolves of their best opportunities or been able to maybe counter-attack. But I think overall, the progression isn't there. So United were playing dead slow. Like you could see, it was like I said to someone sitting next to me, I went, United wouldn't do it this slow in training. Like if you did it in training, you would not pass the ball 6 yards, 7 yards. At that pace, you would be popping it. But of course, in a game, you're nervous. So you're struggling. You're trying to keep play within yourselves. So United did that okay. And thankfully, Wolves were not particularly good. If you played Brighton yesterday, would you have won it? I don't really know. I think Brighton would have been able to rip through you in certain parts of the park. But you've only got to beat what's in front of you, Haydar. The past doesn't matter. What you were doing 6 weeks ago doesn't matter. What you did at Christmas doesn't matter. What matters now is the next game, the next game, and the next game. And as I keep saying, then go on holiday.
That's all that matters. And I think there's been a massive overreaction. I think United should have had top four wrapped up. We said this before, didn't we? Like they probably should have had third wrapped up at some stage. But then pressure is a funny thing. Newcastle are dropping points. They haven't won in the last few games. And you'll see other teams start to drop points as well. So I think, look, it's business end of the season, but these lads need to show that they've got some bottle to get this top four position. I think we've seen though that there is a mentality problem in the squad, but that can only be fixed in the summer. But Rob, let's move on to the match stats as well. So you can see United had so many more shots. They had 27 shots to Wolves' 5. I mean, it did feel like that as well. And I think something that we spoke about off air, I mean, you see 18 from open play, 7 from set pieces, 2 counterattacks as well. Only 2 goals. We know the issue that United do have, but I think one of the positives is that at least we're creating chances. Ten Hag's system is working. United are creating chances. There's just not enough goals. And I think one of the things that we did speak about on previous shows when Marcus was in that purple form was that if he stops scoring, United stops scoring. And I think, unfortunately, that's what we've kind of seen. We need Sancho to score more goals. He's got 5 in the league. Martial's got 5. He's been injured. And Anthony's got 4 goals. So, we need more from those players. And Bruno as well. We need more goals from Bruno. But something we're speaking about off air, United scored 51 goals in the league. Not enough. But talk to listeners about something that you were saying to me off air, but as well about actually how many goals United have scored this season, because that did surprise me.
Well, yes, Garnacho's goal yesterday was Manchester United's 100th goal of the campaign. So how many games have United played? It's kind of best part of 70 games this season. So you are averaging more than one goal a game, more like 1.5. But the issue is in the Premier League. So the issue is we've seen this season, like you spoke about it at the top of the show, where United have not travelled well this year. And there's an irony, like kind of some kind of ironic twist to that, Haider, because again, if you go back to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's time and when Ole went on that run of being unbeaten away for a whole year, and people were like, well, you know, how are United doing it? You know, are United actually that good? And I think our general kind of summary was that, no, United are not that good, but they've found a way to deal with it. So that is about mentality. That's about managing games. And I think this is what Ten Hag needs to kind of work on, obviously, in the off-season and going into next year. Because you can't go away to the top nine and lose all those games or not pick up points. You can't. You're not if you really want to be a challenger. So that's very acute and specific. So it's quite good that the manager can look at that. But when you look at these stats here yesterday, they're both good and bad. So 27 attempts, 18 from open play. Yeah, that sounds good, doesn't it? What it probably would lean towards is that Manchester United need a number nine that scores goals. But ironically, again, I would not say that yesterday was about Anthony Martial. I thought Martial did what he had to do in the time that he had. And you can't overwork him. And I think if you get him the ball in the box with open play and, you know, with an open shot, guess what happens? He scores. And in fact, the stats back that up. He's got the best games to goal ratio out of any Manchester United player this year. So it does show that he can do it. The problem is his injuries. But I think when you look at these numbers, you know, a 7% conversion rate kind of leans towards that Manchester United just still find it difficult in the Premier League to put the ball in the back of the net. And I don't think it's as simple as just a number nine fixes those things. It's about the chemistry. You mentioned a load of players there, reeled them off, players that need to score goals. You know what, Haider? You need a couple of two, three more goals from your centre-backs, from set pieces. You need some goals from Eriksen, from open play. You need Casemiro to get one or two extra more. It's not just about the striker. It's about the whole team. And I think that's where United fall down. Like yesterday, loads of opportunities away from Martial, but couldn't really put the ball in the net. And this game, again, for a normal team that does these things and hits these numbers, should win 5-0. Game should be over after 20 or 30 minutes, and then you should be able to cruise through it. But Manchester United like doing it the hard way. And this set of players, they are running out of gas quickly, both mentally and physically.
Yeah, and I think that is actually the key. And that's why I've almost... some of the same players have made some of the same mistakes that we've seen over the past, let's say, I'm going to say about the month. And, you know, we have to acknowledge that. But I also do think they play so many games, and that's why I kind of sit here and I think it's not 100% their fault. Like you're 70 games and you're playing against a side that's played one game a week, as we have seen let's say, for example, Newcastle, really one game a week. They haven't gone that far apart from the Carabao in the cups. So I think it's a really difficult situation for the players, but they have to find a way now. They have to dig deep. Let's have a look at this, Rob, as well. This is from Laurie Whitwell from The Athletic, and this is one of his tweets. So United have had 27 shots versus Wolves for an XG of 2.68. They created four big chances, taking a season total to 76. Only City and Liverpool have more. That's an interesting statistic, isn't it? Because it kind of lends to what we were saying, is that United are actually creating chances, but they're not putting away. And look, it's not rocket science. We know that United need a number nine in the summer. Whether it's Harry Kane, whether it's Osimhen. I actually really like Ivan Toney. I mean, we don't know what's going to happen. Is he going to get banned? But I actually think he'd fit really, really nicely as well. He's got a good age profile. It could be Ramos, whoever. But United are creating chances. So, I mean, it's very simplistic. I know you just said, oh, number nine doesn't solve it. But surely a number nine that can... Martial scored five goals this year. Obviously, he's been injured. If he could keep fit, I'm sure he would have got into double digits. But you can't rely on him. Let's be honest. He can't keep fit. But I don't think he's a bad option off the bench. I think he's, you know, you saw, like you said earlier, the way he links play. United generally look a better side. Bruno looks better with him. You know, Antony should have given the ball a few times. We'll talk about Antony later on in more detail. But when you're having a look at if United can add, let's say, a number nine that adds, let's say, 15 goals, let's say a 20-goal season striker, United are in the mix for the title. They're in the race, I think. And they're doing all of this without, let's say, a goal-scoring number nine, and with a lot of goals on the side. So I think small margins, United make some good recruitments. It's showing that Ten Hag's system is working. There are issues that we know, you know, in terms of we spoke about issues playing out from the back and other issues. I think there's issues with the goalkeeper. We won't touch on that today. But that has been mentioned. But if United can add more goals to the side, in theory, they're closer to the top.
Yeah, and this is why I said, you know, it's not just about a number 9. I think it's probably the easiest take in the world to say you lost Cristiano Ronaldo, so maybe go and buy a striker. And that's the truth. Like, you do need a striker that can put the ball in the back of the net, but you also need a striker that can help other players, which is, I think, why the Harry Kane conversation is the most interesting one. But we're not going to go there today. I think when you look at the kind of season totals there, 76 for big chances, what you're looking for over a campaign is somewhere pushing towards 90 or 100. That's kind of what you want. You know, it's a metric which shows that you're getting into the real business end of the pitch, you know, 6 yards from goal after open play working and things like that. So to show that you're actually doing all the right things. So Manchester United can be creative, but it's the final decision and it's putting the ball in the back of the net. In the Premier League specifically, that is the problem. It's not a problem in the Europa. It's not a problem in the FA Cup. And it hasn't been a problem in the League Cup. So those things sometimes are anomalies, because you'd say that maybe in the Cups you play worse teams, don't you? So how is it maybe like when you play the bottom half in the Premier League that you still can't maybe replicate that form and not put the ball in the net? I don't think it's as easy as just saying Martial. Do you get what I mean? So this is the whole thing. I think Martial, as you said, is right. He can't start games. He cannot be your starter now. And I think that's definitive after this season. But it doesn't mean that he can't help you. So you might want to keep him, or you might want to try and move him on, use him in a trade if you want to bring someone else to the football club, where I think he still has value outside of the football club. Other teams would look at him and say, we could get something from him. If they could get him, obviously, on a bargain, that would be something else we'd have to talk about. But I think here, you need your number 9, you might need another number 10, and you need someone who can play midfield and do all these things. So this is the kind of three-pronged attack that you need to be able to help the other players. You just said about Bruno playing the 10. That's definitely my preference for him. There's no doubt about it. That's his preference. We all know that. He wants to play as the 10. And when he plays a Martial, he's a better number 10. That's it. Wasn't great with Ronaldo. Isn't great with Rashford when Rashford's there. And I think when Weghorst is there, it's completely fractured because he doesn't do the things that Bruno wants him to do. So it's difficult, isn't it? Because then Bruno can only play with one of four strikers. And that is like, it doesn't help you. You might go and need another number 10 that can do other things. So that's why I always talk about those things. But now I think overall, you looked at it, you know, an XG of 2.68 means that you should win the game. But again, as I said to you off camera, that only matters if you can put the ball in the net. You got the second goal yesterday, but you got it in the 90th minute. What you need to do is be 2-0 up after 10 minutes, and then you can control the game with a slower pace.
100%. I think a lot of it comes with control, Rob, and it comes with the ability to keep the ball. And we've seen that United aren't great playing out the back. You know, De Gea does go along quite often at times, and that means that United have to win that ball, don't they? And they have to win the second balls. And I think it's De Zerbi that says it, is that, you know, when you kick it long, when a goalkeeper kicks it long, like, that's a 50-50 chance whether you're going to win it or yeah. not. But obviously, if you're playing out from the back, that increases your security and your control in the game. We saw that with Steele, didn't we, the other day, where he was levels above De Gea in that respect. But that's a different show. And look, De Gea's got copped a lot of bullets and a lot of strays the last couple of weeks and all season, to be honest with you. And it's quite funny, actually. I'm just going to touch it, Rob, because he's going to win the Golden Glove, which is just hilarious because United haven't. Like, it's a weird one because United have got, what, the most clean sheets, but obviously they've had games against Liverpool, the games against City where they've got absolutely smashed Brentford is another one. But it's funny because while you may look back in a few years and go, oh, well, United had the best defence because, oh, David De Gea was the best goalkeeper, but, you know, you have to dive deep into this kind of the nuances and the facts and actually look, United haven't been that great defensively. So I just think it's quite funny just to think about that De Gea will probably win the Golden Glove.
Yeah, look, I think it's one of these things with De Gea. We can talk about his feet, you know, and maybe some of his, I don't know, command of his box or things like that that get talked about all the time. He will just show you the Golden Glove trophy. So that's that. So like, as much as people want to talk about him and all of these things, I'm certainly an advocate that Man United should go and buy another goalkeeper. But as I keep saying, it's not priority number 1, 2 or 3. So that's where I think United are. The big difference will be, of course, if you have new owners or some money coming into the football club, which means you could probably buy more players. So that's the answer to that kind of conundrum. I think the whole thing with De Gea and what you saw yesterday is that, yes, his weakness is still the passing out from the back and making those choices. To tell you the truth, Haydar, I'm happy for the last 4 games of the season for him to kick it long. I don't want to see them playing kind of kind of some form of like tiki-taka around the back. It makes me nervous. I'm thinking to myself, it's not needed at this point in the season. You need to go onto the training pitch and practice that for weeks to be very good at it. So I'm not going to, I don't think that's just De Gea's fault, you see. I think that's the whole of the back five, and he's included in that. But he's going to win the Golden Glove, Haydar, and I'm going to say it. He deserves it. Like, he's going to take that glove, and that's what he feels his main job is and what his main strength is. And that's come from the kind of, you know, the triple threat there at the back of those two centre-backs that have played there all season long, who are now no longer there together, and De Gea. And all three of them deserve that. But what it does show, Haydar, is that a clean sheet is not everything. Like, you can concede one a game if you score four. Who cares? You know, so there's the balancing act there that Manchester United, if you get better at scoring goals in the Premier League, and actually you can give up a goal now and then. It's not really a problem. That's how City think. You know, City might concede a goal and you'll go, oh, that was a bad goal this week. But they go score five and no one cares. And that's all right. That's really the balancing act.
That's actually Arsenal at home, right? Everyone's waxed lyrical about Ramsdale. I think Ramsdale's a decent keeper. I think he's very proactive. I think he's very good with his feet, but he's got a mistake in him. But Arsenal can't keep a clean sheet at home, but he's consistently praised, isn't he, as being one of the top keepers in the Premier League. So perception is interesting.
And he is, because I think, again, it's about sometimes fashion in football, but this is not a point of fashion. This is just about how the game has gone, how managers think and how players think. And you need goalkeepers who can do 12 things rather than three. You know, in the old days, and you still get goalkeepers saying, oh, well, their job is to save the ball and stuff like this. I've had this conversation recently on the Promised Land with Scott, you know, and yes, they should save a certain amount of chances, but they're also expected to do other things in a more rounded manner. And that's where Ramsdale has been a big part of Arsenal's success. That's why Arsenal have been better this year than they were last year, because they've corrected some of these things. So that's the challenge really for Ten Hag now, is that if he sticks with De Gea, then he's got to try and make the back line work better as a morphed entity together of keeping the ball. Because we've seen times this year where it's been good, and then they've been tired and it's got bad very quickly. And you lost Martinez, who's probably been, I would say, you know, him and Shaw, best two defenders this season in terms of their production and what they've been doing. You lose him and it's like cutting a leg off. You know, it really is for Man United. So they're the things that you're going to have to fix in the next transfer window. And it's probably why that if you keep De Gea, Haydar, you probably will go and buy another centre-back. That's the way I look at this now. Because if you lose Maguire, which you will, then you probably need someone who can play out from the back. And this is why Kim from Napoli is a huge,
interesting
player, because he's a ball player, he's strong, he's athletic, he's as big as Maguire, but he's not as slow as Maguire. So I think this is the kind of way you're going to go in terms of your next player, because if you can get him for 50 million, you might then defer on a goalkeeper for, say, another season.
I mean, I think Kim would be a sensational, and for 50 million as well, Rob. I mean, you look at his numbers, but you also look at him and how good he's been for Napoli. I mean, he'd be a sensational signing, because it also gives you the option, because I think Lindelof has cemented himself now as like, let's say, I think he's a good backup option. I know you're not the biggest fan of him, but I actually think he's been good. He's
played well.
He has. He stepped up. And if you need, for example, Luke Shaw to slot in, although we don't want to see that, but he's been very good at centre-back. I mean, I've been really impressed with Luke Shaw this season. Mm. He's a top-quality footballer. But you lose his that balance that you mentioned, and his attacking qualities going forward. And he is one of United's best, I would say he's one of United's best, actually, attacking options going forward, because he's improved his end product, for example.
Luke Shaw?
I would say, I'd say he's improved his end product this season. I
mean,
I
think he's our best progressive ball carrier, the best in the whole team. So that is what you lose at left back when he doesn't play left back, is your best ball progressor. So like it's simple maths. It's like you take that away and you tell Malacia to be the best ball carrier on the park. Malacia will probably be your like eighth or ninth best ball carrier. So like that is a problem for Ten Hag. And this is why, you know, I think United are okay at fullback at the moment, but not particularly godly in terms of winning titles with it. I don't think United could have a title challenge with these four fullbacks that they've got. But you need to find a way to have better ball carrying.
Well, absolutely. And I think, where I will disagree with you is I don't think United can go another season with David De Gea in goal if they want to take to the next level, because it's so important in Ten Hag's philosophy and his principles to be able to play out the back. And he's just, I know that United weren't as bad when they had Martinez and Varane. And I know that, you know, we've seen more mistakes because we haven't had the first choice centre-backs. But I honestly just, I think that if Ten Hag wants to play his system properly, he has to upgrade. And if that means we have to bring in a goalkeeper that's maybe not as good as saving, I'm actually okay with that, because I think United can need to control games better. And it does start from the back, Rob. Like, we talk about the midfield, but it does start from the back. You look at Brighton, for example. I mean, they've got two keepers. Would you say that Steele and Sanchez are better, you know, in terms of reflex saves and then David De Gea? Absolutely not. But both of them give Brighton control. And Brighton are one of the best sides in Europe, I'd say, are playing out from the back. And I just think that United, to go to the next level, it's almost that, I know it gets said, it's very cliche, but you know, when Pep came in, he had Joe Hart and obviously brought in Bravo and got rid of Bravo and brought in Edison. I think it's so important for, and you see with Arteta, with Ramsdale and Leno, I think it's so important for United now, for their progression. I would sacrifice on the fullback, because I think, although, like you said, they're not top quality, but I would rather bring in a goalkeeper who'll do those things that Ten Hag needs them to do, makes United better at controlling games, rather than focus on, let's say, the fullbacks, where we're doing okay. It's not great, but we're doing okay.
Yeah, look, I don't fundamentally disagree with you. I think the point I said about having a better ball playing goalkeeper is very valid, and it's something that needs to change at some point. But I think you've got to look at it like this, is that if you haven't got the funds at the moment and the manager is openly saying that he wants De Gea to stay, you're saying, oh, that, you know, I can't go to the next level without that goalkeeper, and the manager is telling you something different. Because if the manager really thought it, he would do what Pep did with Joe Hart.
Do you believe that Ten Hag is being 100% truthful in the press? Because he's not going to go out and say, especially when De Gea is having a difficult time, say, oh, well, you know, like, you know, I don't want him at the club. I just think United are the options. I mean, does Dean Henderson come back? I mean, I'd rather... I don't know.
Well, I hope not. But look, I think what we all see, and we all feel it, and we all know it, and nobody's particularly wrong with that. Again, I lean towards this, and I get into trouble quite a bit with United fans, because they're always a bit like, oh, it's too balanced. The manager is telling you he wants him to sign a contract. Now, if the manager didn't say that, like you said, he's not going to dig him out publicly. He's not an idiot. He's not going to do that. He's not Mourinho. Yeah. He's going to manage the situation, but he's openly put a contract on the table and asked the goalkeeper to stay. So I think that you can put caveats into that and say, do you know what, David? We might go and buy another goalkeeper in the meantime. That might mean that you're not number one. But hey, here's your 200 grand a week or whatever it will be, 175 with bonuses, et cetera, et cetera. But the manager is telling you very publicly that he's giving this guy a contract, because Haydar, the easy option here is to not give him a contract. That would be the easy option. Don't give him a contract and force the board's hand to go and buy a goalkeeper. He's not doing that. You know, so even when, like, Butland came to the team, you know, Butland was never brought to the team to be a De Gea alternative. He's just there if De Gea breaks an arm or a wrist or something and that you need someone to come into the goal. Butland has not played a minute. And the manager has made that choice. He could have brought Butland in for one or two or three games. You know, this is an England international goalkeeper not so long ago. You know, went to the World Cup in 2018 with England. So you could have done that, but he's not doing it, is he? He's not saying, I need more ball progression out of this. Now, he might feel that long term, and I agree with that. And you could go get David Raya for 25 million, 30 million, because he's out of contract with a year left next year at Brentford. There are options. Haydar, he's not doing it. he's making priorities of other positions. And that's what I do see, is that I look at this and I think not being able to play your £80 million captain is a bigger problem. So you might need to get rid of him and bring in a centre-back that you can then play when Varane gets injured, because Varane gets injured all the time. This is why you need a number nine now, not because Ronaldo left the club, but because Martial gets injured. So this is always the balancing point. And De Gea, I called him the other day, the great survivor, because he's been here since Sir Alex, and everyone has killed him for years that he can't claim balls and that he ain't got feet. And every manager that's come into the football club has still made him the number one. He's never got dropped. That means something. So I'm with you. Go get a ball-playing goalkeeper.
One point of this, I'd argue that that almost lends to the, or you look at the bigger picture of United, you know, the issues with the Glazer ownership and the mismanagement that there's been, because the squad hasn't been invested properly. I said the money, an exorbitant amount of money has been spent, but I would say it's been spent well, and we can all agree on that, right?
Badly.
So I would almost argue that, although De Gea's always probably been an issue, when you're looking to, I think up until, obviously, when he was playing really, really well, but when United decided that they, you know, the modern football changed, and let's say, and managers decided, sorry, that they wanted to start playing out from the back. I think that's when De Gea's days started to get limited. But you could almost say that because the squad has so many deficiencies, even though he is an issue, he probably isn't a priority. But I think now that Ten Hag's come in, a player that truly, sorry, manager that truly wants to play out from the back, I think.
But does he?
I think he does, yeah. We've seen it. Well,
well, then don't give him a contract. Like, don't give him a contract, get a goalkeeper that can play out from the back. Like, these are not difficult things to... This is not about the Glazers going, we want David De Gea to stay. It is not. This is about the technical aspect of the football club, from going down from your technical director to your manager to your coaches and then even to the players, that if this is a big problem, you move them out. Why is Harry Maguire not playing when when your two best centre-backs are injured? Because you don't trust him. And that would happen with the goalkeeper as well. So you're right. He's not going to dig the goalkeeper out. He doesn't do that. And that's the right way to manage. But he could, you can smell it. You know, he could have rotated in and out. He could have tried different things with Butland or even with Heaton when Heaton was fit. And you could have done different things. He hasn't done it. He's decided that his best goalkeeper by a mile is De Gea. And De Gea spent 10 years with people telling him that his feet are not good enough. As we move on, yes, people look towards the Edisons, the Alissons more as that kind of goalkeeper. You look at Costa in Portugal, something will be available in the summer. You look at Raya, you look at these players. You just said Steele. Steele's a player who's changed his game. You know, he's actually in his 30s. You know, he's not a kid. People think he's young. He's in his 30s. He's changed his game to become a bit more of a ball player. And the manager at Brighton thinks he's a better ball player than someone like Robert Sanchez, who's a ball player. So that's the balance you have there, because that's about De Zerbi's philosophy, isn't it? I don't think this manager is going, oh, no, I wish I had a goalkeeper that did that. Because if he was thinking that, he would not put a contract on the table. He would say, do not give that guy a contract because I don't want to play him in the future. It's not happening. So I do think United will go buy a goalkeeper eventually, either this summer or next summer or the summer after. There's a chance Dean Henderson might come back, but I think it's highly unlikely. And then you might morph that way. And I keep saying this. I don't think David De Gea is the guy who's lost you matches this season in those 9 defeats. You know, when you've lost like 7-0 at Liverpool, Haydar, he's not been the problem. The problem's the outfield. So I think that the manager still is trying to construct the outfield passing. And yesterday even, United played so slow. Again, that's not really the outball from De Gea. That's from the outball from everyone else. That's everyone else not really passing the ball out properly. That's Lindelof. That's Varane. You've got to tell these centre-backs to take the load in those moments, and they haven't. So that's why I say you miss Martinez. And that's why I say, like, De Gea is the great survivor, because I think he's going to be the number one next year, and it's going to be the same rhetorical debate with people saying he's not good enough with his feet. Then you need to go tell the manager that. Like, do you get what I mean, Haydar? Like, you need to tell the manager that you don't want David De Gea, and United fans have done that. I don't think the manager cares. I think the manager thinks what he thinks. And I think De Gea will stay there unless you can go get Ray of 25 million, 30 million. But then would Ray want to come and compete with De Gea? Well, I don't know. If I'm Ray, probably not.
I think it's an interesting conversation. I think let's see what happens this summer, because if United get taken over and there's money there, I think Ten Hag would like to fix more areas of the squad. But let's see. Like, we're not going to talk about the ownership because, you know, we don't know what's happening yet. But it'd be very, very interesting. Rob, I'm going to skip past this as well. We know that United created a lot of chances. And I want to focus on Aaron Wan-Bissaka. And there's a comment from Helly saying, you know, Wan-Bissaka keeps impressing her. His improvement has been actually quite mind-blowing for me personally. I mean, I big fan when he came in. You know, I loved kind of, you know, how good he was one-on-one. But we spoke consistently under Ollie, wasn't it? Consistently. How bad he was at his awareness at his defending of the back post. It was shocking. There was obviously a disconnect between Lindelof, who was playing on that right hand side under Ollie, and Wan-Bissaka. There was obviously that channel consistently got exposed. But we saw Wan-Bissaka as well at the beginning of the season. You know, completely out of favor. Dalot was number one all up until the World Cup, and then Dalot came back, has had really poor form, to be honest. Had a few injuries here and there. But what Wan-Bissaka has done this season to turn it around, and the attitude as well, Rob, he's not going out in the press and talking badly about anyone. He's put his head down. He's worked really, really hard. Now he's emerged now as Man United's number one right back. Will he be in the summer going into next season? We don't know. United are looking at right backs. But really, really impressive. You can see on the heat map here on the screen, you know, how high he was playing as well. And that was something that we were quite concerned about, is that could he could he develop into and improve his ball playing ability? And Ten Hag has done that. And you just got to give credit, haven't you, to him and to Ten Hag. I think what I really like, he's building a nice relationship with Ante on the right hand side. But as you can see on the right hand side of the screen, you can see his season stats from FBref. And what's really impressed me actually is how his pass completion is in 84th percentile. So previously we'd say that's something that he wasn't that good at, but he's been really, really solid at that. And then his progressive carries, I mean, look, 83rd percentile, nearly 3 progressive carries per game, really improved that side of his game. So I'm really, really impressed with what I'm seeing from him, and he deserves all the plaudits because he's really taken his game to the next level. Him and Ten Hag really do deserve their plaudits.
Yeah, I think, again, it's a real indicator of kind of how fans can be wrong. So no offence to all the fans. But yes, most people would have sold Aaron Wan-Bissaka either in the summer window last year or in the winter window. And we probably were part of that. You know, I think we looked at that and we were like, well, Wan-Bissaka's not cutting it. Last year, tons of problems off the pitch that he had, and that was affecting his personal life. And we know the human beings, that can affect your form. I think what we've seen differently this year, and this is why I said after the World Cup that for me he would be first choice over Dalot, is that Dalot is still a little bit scatty. Dalot can still give you great moments at the top end of the pitch. Dalot is definitely a better provider than Wan-Bissaka. But that's not the only job, is it? You've got to be able to defend. You've got to be able to have a motor. You've got to be able to stick to people. That's the other side of this. You know, when there's a time to stick, you stick. And when there's a time to twist, you twist. So it's about learning that. I think that's what Wan-Bissaka's become. When you look at the heat map, what you're really seeing there is, yes, he's a right back. He's kind of playing right wing back at times, pushing it as high as he can. But what's he doing? He's inverting. So that's something that we've never really seen from him. We certainly didn't see it under Solskjaer. He wasn't expected to do that. But you're seeing that Aaron Wan-Bissaka is quite a tidy footballer. He's got things in his locker that he's not had to use or been asked to use. And that's the credit that goes to the manager here, because the manager's gone, you're good at these things. But, you know, you just being able to tackle people is not really what the job is. The job is come inside, make the extra player. And if you invert, that means then you've got 4 midfielders in there because you're one of those midfielders and you outnumber the other midfield either 3-4 or 2-4. That's the job. So he does that really well. He does it better than Dalot on all facets. Looking at the stats and looking at numbers, just to kind of wrap it on that, I think the big thing here is looking at kind of progressive carries and take-ons is that this was where I used to criticize him all the time, that when he got the ball on the right-hand side, it was always an infield ball. Just got the ball, never went up, just went inside to the midfield. That's really easy to press against if you're Fred. So give the ball to Fred in the center circle, not a good ball, is it? Now what you're seeing is that he's running up the line. He's tag-teaming with Anthony, who again we'll talk about in a minute, but he's giving you width. And he's inverting, and that is the job. And that's why I said around Christmas, he will be the starting fullback. So I'm really pleased with how he's played. Like, his talent was never undoubted. Like, we knew what he was at Crystal Palace, but we didn't know if he could become this kind of player. But we are seeing it now. And I think this is why the conversation around, you know, a Dumfries or someone like that, a different kind of right back. You know, you're not looking at someone like a Lamptey who's fallen off the edge of the world. You're looking at players that work in the system. And I think that's where Wan-Bissaka, that's the biggest plaudit I could give him, is that you look at those metrics. They're fantastic for any right back. You would want that at your football club.
Absolutely. Rob, we're going to... I mean, look, I think what we're going to see from him is... I think you'll hold the squad position if he doesn't get sold. I think that's what it is. And you're not need a player like this because you think about what he can actually give. I don't think there's a better 1v1 defending fullback in world football. Sometimes there are games where United is going to have to bring him on, like they did in the Carabao Cup. You know, Dalot was kind of getting rinsed by Sam Maximan, brought him on and he shut out the game. And I think that's such a big, powerful thing to have in your squad. And before, that's all, I feel like that was all he actually had. And that was what the problem was. But now when you can see, you know, he's progressively carrying the ball. He's inverting. I mean, look, we know he's defensive. Look at his interceptions. Look at those clearances and et cetera. They're very, very good. I'd like to see him add some more assists to his game. You know, you're looking at here, he's in the 11th percentile. He's not really offering as much. But I think now he's added those aspects and those improvements to his game. So you're not just saying, oh, bring Wan-Bissaka on to shut someone out. He can do that. Plus, he can invert. He can carry the ball. He can link up with whoever's playing on the right wing, usually Anthony. So I think that is the improvement now. And I think he more than deserves his place in the squad. I actually wouldn't get rid of him. I'd be quite disappointed if we do, because I think that he offers a lot, and he can start.
He can start, and it's really my big bugbear with any footballer when we say, like, oh, well, they're really good at tackling. Like this is not 1985. You know what I mean? Tackling is not the most important part of the game anymore. Yes, being aggressive, we want all our players to be aggressive and do those things, and Wan-Bissaka can do that. But it's such a rare time where you have a right back or a left back now looking after a forward going one-on-one. It's rare. It doesn't happen week to week. You need to be able to do everything else. You need to be able to invert. You need to be able to keep the ball. You need to progress the ball. You need to be a threat at both ends. So this is the thing. We used to talk, didn't we, a lot about him and being worried with Lindelof on the inside. Now, that's something he's had to deal with again recently. But you can see that when Varane's there, it's okay. It's not as much of a problem, is it? It's less of a problem, and Wan-Bissaka can be himself. That's what I've seen this season from Haidar, is that he's kind of come out of his shell. He now kind of, he feels like he belongs. That's what I look at with him. Before, he looked isolated. He looked like a player kind of with the weight of the world on his shoulders. And as I said, he had problems off the pitch, and that contributed to it. But ultimately, Wan-Bissaka should stay at the football club because he's proved it. That's the point. This year, you want all the players to prove that they're valid. And I would not be upset if we start game one next season and Wan-Bissaka is your starting right back, because he can do all those things. And I couldn't care less if he tackles people or not. I want all the other metrics to be good. That's what I want from him. And he's delivering that. Those metrics there on the right-hand side, if that didn't say Wan-Bissaka at the top and you just said, this is a player from Europe somewhere, I would look at that and go, yeah, they're good. And that's what I care about. I don't really care about reputations. I don't care about kicking wingers into row three or four. The days of Stuart Pearce are long gone.
I agree. Rob, let's talk about Anthony. We'll touch on him during the game, and then we'll look at his overall season statistics. And I think Anthony gets a lot of, let's say, there's a lot of debate on Anthony. You know, some are positive about him, some are negative about him.
Mm-hmm.
I think when we look at the game yesterday, good assist with his right foot, should do that more, use that right foot more. He can be predictable. You're looking at here, dribbles completed 4 out of 4. So, you know, his retention was very good there. We know that, you know, off the ball, his defending is very, very good. What really frustrated me yesterday, and I said this to you off air, was that pass to Martial, if he just executed that, some of his decision making can be really, really frustrating. You know, if he'd executed that, United are 2-0 up then, aren't they? Going into halftime, and that's the game done. So that's what frustrates me about Anthony. But what I love about Anthony as well is that he's an absolute fighter. You know, his attitude is phenomenal. He's never fazed. He's always trying things. And when we talk about Sancho, and I'm a massive Sancho fan, I haven't given up on him just yet. I think what's happened off the pitch, you don't just become one of the best players in Europe and then suddenly a shadow of yourself. There's a lot going off the pitch for Sancho. But where I think he trumps Sancho is he's a mentality monster. Like, his mentality is so, he nothing fazes him. You know, he'll go and scrap like he did against Brighton with Dunk. You know, he'll try a trick, it will fail, he'll just try it again, you know. And that is a great mentality to have at the club. And I think we've lacked that. But what also does frustrate me about him is that, you know, he is still raw in certain aspects. We've paid a lot of money for him. But I think United have got a real player on their hands, and he will get better. What we saw yesterday is we saw the best of Anthony, but we also saw the worst of him. And what is your view on him? Because he does get a lot of stick, but I think that for a first season, he's had a good season, and it's a good first season, a good foundation, and we know where he needs to improve. And I am confident with Ten Hag that he will make those improvements and become a really good winger.
Yeah, look, you want goals and assists from all your front line. You need more from that in terms of the production. This is why we spent the first half of the show talking about those things. So Anthony's part of that conversation. But, you know, the truth is, and it is again the bottom line here, is that the fan base have not taken to him for all the wrong reasons. You know, that they just, a lot of the fan base are just turned on by the numbers. You know, they want someone getting 20 goals and 20 assists. Jaden was getting that for years at Borussia Dortmund, and now Jaden's showing that maybe he's not quite that player anymore for whatever reason. I think when you look at Anthony, again, first year at Manchester United, his job and his role in the team, I think he's doing absolutely everything that you ask of him. So, yeah, he will frustrate you every now and then. But he was definitely, I think, our most productive player yesterday. There were times when he was trying to create the opportunities on his own. I think the problem with Anthony is that sometimes he just does too much. And in that moment, he's so left-footed, he wants to come in on the left. That's not really a problem. It's kind of what he's been told to do. That's his job. But it was one point yesterday, which he did a brilliant run right on the outside of the defence, took on two players, went wide, then started to invert towards the box and had two runners off him. And he just had to roll the ball in front of them and United score probably, or hit the target at the very least. And what did he do? He brings it to his left. He takes two extra touches and you're thinking, yeah, he's going to shoot, isn't he? So if it goes in the net, fine. But you can't rely on that all the time. So I think that's the frustrating part. But the most important bit, Haydar, is that at least he's doing those actions. So that's something that you could say about Jaden. Jaden isn't. So Jaden's performances are slowly but surely getting better, but certainly nowhere near the standard that you expect of maybe a 20-goal, 20-assist player. That's why you paid the money for him. I don't have those worries about Anthony. I think Anthony will go away, have a holiday. He's played at a World Cup. He's come back, he's played a lot of games for Man United. He's had an injury here and there. And now he's going to have a summer off and be able to be good next season. And I think that, a bit like Wan-Bissaka, if he's your starting right-sided player, no problem at all. I think he's earned it enough. I don't really care about the transfer fee. All I really care is about the production.
Rob, I want to pick out a few key statistics here from his season. Yeah. So you can see here, obviously, shots total. That doesn't surprise me. You know, nearly 3.45. So, you know, over three shots a game, which doesn't surprise me. But like, you look at Iron Robin. I mean, I know he's the standout kind of example, but he was so predictable, but he was incredible at it. But I look at Anthony and I think that when he has got the shot off and he just flies into the corner, it's fantastic. Just add a bit more variety to this game. You know, you can go on the outside. He isn't slow. We saw that yesterday, and you know, obviously the chance you mentioned. That really frustrated me. And the other one where he should have just slotted it through to Martial instead of shooting as well. And we would have killed the game early. But you have a look here. Pass completions, not too bad as well. 73rd percentile. Progressive carries, you know, he's up there with the top echelons of Europe, really. And interceptions as well. I've seen multiple times now that when Ten Hag takes him off, because I think he's so good defensively, United take their foot off the gas a little bit and with the changes that Ten Hag makes, and then you invite pressure on late on in the games. And I think that's happened against Brighton, I believe, where he came off and United regressed and regressed and regressed. And obviously then that penalty was awarded to McAllister and United lost that game. What I like about him is that he'll do things on the ball, but he'll do the off ball fundamentals. And I think that's why he is United's first choice. What I'm really excited about is that next season, we've seen Ahmad have a fantastic loan spell at Sunderland. I mean, he was in the team of the year for the championship. He's looked like one of the best players, looks a real talent. He almost looks a little bit more refined in terms of his end product. I would love to see those two fighting for that spot next year. Maybe it's a little bit early for Ahmad Diallo. I don't know. But I think United have got a real player on their hands, and he's had a really great loan. And I think both being left-footed off the right-hand side, Ten Hag likes that, doesn't he? He likes to have the left foot off the right-hand side and right foot off the left. And I think that would be a really interesting proposition to have those two players competing. But Anthony is the number one, and he will get better. He's had a good debut season. And I think the price tag is what maybe skews people's minds on him. And for some reason, I don't know why, Rob, but like every opposition ground we go to, he gets booed. I don't know why people don't like him. I don't get it. But they just don't like him. But I'm really happy to see him at the club.
It's because he plays for Man United.
Probably, yeah. And he scored against Arsenal in that first game, and the Arsenal fans don't like that. But I think he's got the right mentality to be at the club. He's got to improve his game. He's raw, but I think there's a player in there.
Yeah, look, just on the Ahmad point, just quickly, is that in the comments there from Kenneth, it says there's some sell, stay or loan. We'll do that at the end of the show, Haydar. So if you could bring that up right at the end and we'll do a little bit of Ahmad Diallo. But I think when you look at Anthony, for me, year one, really difficult jump to go from the Eredivisie to being a relevant Premier League footballer. When you look at these percentiles and these numbers, the overall numbers over his body of work over a year show that he's a really good player. So, you know, in terms of progressive carries, take-ons, everything that you got there, that's the kind of right-sided player that the manager wants. And yes, he's going to have some kids to add to the mix there as well later on down the line. I've got no issues with Anthony. I want him to have better production, but he's still a young player in terms, you know, like, was he 21, 22? So this is still a learning process. And it's about becoming effective every game, isn't it? It's about to do these things all the time. you look there, assists and XAG, not great. Kind of like, ooh. But then you look at, say, like non-penalty box XG, and you can see the threat that he has in terms of being on the edge of the box with that left foot of a wand. Do you know what I mean? We know he can hit the target and score goals there. It's just that you just don't need to do it every day, Anthony. Like, maybe just mix it up a little bit. Use your right foot a little bit. Again, as I said to you off camera, he got an assist yesterday, didn't he? And it was with his right foot. So he can do it. I don't care what people say about all this, about he only wants to be on his left foot. He just needs to do it a little bit more on his right. But I think, again, I'm not interested in the price. I'm interested in what he can give Ten Hag. And I think he's shown in year one, undoubtedly, that he could be not just a relevant player at Man United, but a star. I really do. I think he could be the player that gets you 10, maybe 10 goals and 10, 15 assists a season. And if everyone is sharing that, Haydar, then it works. It's just that when no one is doing it, like this year, we've talked about it again at the top of the show, if Bruno's not scoring goals, if Anthony's not scored goals, if Jaden's not scored goals, if Martial can't play, that's a lot of goals not happening, a lot of players not getting their numbers. Anthony's not here to supplement that. Anthony's here to be part of it, and I think he will be.
I think it'd be interesting to see him with a number nine like Harry Kane. I think that sort of caliber of number nine and what Kane brings, what can bring to a side, I think he'd love to play with someone like that. So it'd be interesting to see who United signed for the number nine position and how that elevates his game, because it's not easy for wide players and even for Bruno as a number 10, where, you know, it's Weghorst for a few games and Weghorst is not doing the things that you want him to do. And then, you know, Martial, when he does play, but he's playing very infrequently. You've seen Rashford play there as well. Like, you know, Ten Hag's had to change it around. So having a top quality number nine will make a difference. Rob, let's finish on Alejandro Garnacho. Viva Garnacho. Fantastic cameos. Great to see him back. New contract, new teeth as well, you can see. New hairstyle, all that jazz. But we've really missed him. That impact off the bench.
Yeah.
You know, I want to pull out a few stats because we were talking before the show. And so he's played 16 Premier League games, only 460 minutes. But in that time, he's got 3 goals and 2 assists. He's got 1.9, I think, XG, something like that per game, which is really, really impressive. Impact. What he gives United is directness. I've seen a lot of people say, and you said this as well, actually, obviously, what he offers compared to, let's say, what Sancho. You want Sancho to do more of that. We've spoken about Sancho a lot today, but what you can't doubt with Garnacho is that when he comes onto the pitch, he's going to demand the ball, he's going to get on the ball, and you can see this from the statistics, his season statistics. Look at those progressive carries, 94th percentile, successful take-ons, 75th. Progressive passes received, you know, so he's 95th percentile. He gets the ball and he attacks his man, he takes on his man. And that was a beautiful finish, it was a great goal. And now with the run-in, it's really, really important that United can win the games. I think he's going to be a big, big factor in that, because now you've got someone who can come off the bench. I think there's something to be said as well, because a lot of times he started, he hasn't been as effective. He's better off the bench. At this stage in his career, I think I agree with that. But United have got a real, really good talent on their hands. And it's great to see him playing really, really fearlessly, because a lot of players, sometimes you can say that with Jaden. He looks like he's playing within himself, but Garnacho doesn't. He goes out there, he performs, takes on his man. He's not overawed, so really good talent. And now Ten Hag's got some really interesting options. You know, we'll talk about Ahmad in a second. Ahmad, Garnacho, Sancho, Rashford, Anthony, Pelistri. You know, that's 6 options. Like, they are pretty stacked to those wide areas. And there's some really good young players who want to come back and stake a claim for a starting position.
Yeah, totally. Look, these numbers are amazing for a kid. Like, he's a boy, you know, like this is the thing that started the season. People were saying that he shouldn't feature, that he should go out on loan. And I was saying, no, keep him and play him because he's ready. Just saw there with the comment that came up about Cristiano, you know, at 17 or 18, Garnacho is way above where Ronaldo was at 18, way above in terms of having this kind of outwardness and the impact and effectiveness on the attack. Ronaldo was a bit of a show pony at 18, to be fair to him. You know, he just did some very eye-catching things, but didn't actually return metrics. Now you're looking at Garnacho. I think the thing is that, yes, I think off the bench is still maybe the wisest way to look at this. But I think in recent weeks, we think about United failing to score goals and failing to have a bit of a killer instinct in the box or in and around the box. That's what this boy brings you in spades. So he is a player. And the reason why I wanted him in the team at the start of the season, kind of coming in off the back of a successful Youth Cup campaign, was that when he comes inside and drifts into the middle towards the striker, towards the nine, he is as dangerous as a nine. Yeah, and that's rare. So you saw it yesterday. He was only on the pitch, what, 10, 12 minutes? And when he was there, he's been injured for months. He hasn't been in that situation for a long time. He's a kid. Doesn't mean anything to him. He knows what he has to do. And actually, when you look at the goal, when you really micro-analyze it and slow it right down, he controls the ball and he looks like he's going to cut across. And he just does a little step in, kills the defender. The defender then stops. He lets the ball roll open, opens his body up, and then the goalkeeper can't read it. Now, that's stuff you can't teach. You can't teach that. That is just God-given talent in the moment to know what to do and then to make it so, so precise to come off in off the post, because if it doesn't come in off the post, it's not going in. No way. You either hit the post or the goalkeeper saves it. So he put it through a kind of gap of about 2 or 3 inches. So for me, do you like run these next few games where Garnacho starts? I'm not sure. But Garnacho's got to have minutes and as a priority over Jadon Sancho. So if Rashford comes back in and Rashford starts on the left, I think Garnacho is the guy that finishes games for you and is your killer. I'm not convinced Jadon scores that. You know, Jadon's in there in that moment. I'm not sure he has the kind of confidence that Garnacho has. And that's something inbuilt. Like maybe Jadon had it at 18 at Dortmund, you know, in a different league, in a different setup. But for me, Garnacho is the guy that the guy that comes on and hurts a tired defence, because that's what it was yesterday against Wolves. Wolves were tired. United had lots of opportunities. Garnacho came on and was the cherry on the cake and got United the victory. And you need a bit of that. You probably need it earlier in the game, Haydar, is what I would say, like maybe in the 60th or 70th minute. And that's where the bench is really important. And as I always say, the bench is as important as the starters. At the end of the day, you all win or lose together.
I couldn't agree more. But Rob, let's finish on the question from Kenneth.
Yes.
Saying sell, stay or loan. So we have Ahmad, Pelestri, Kovar, the goalkeeper, Hannibal, and Mainoo. So let's just go and we'll give a little short kind of answer into what we say. So for me, for Ahmad, you 100% keep him. You bring him back next season. I think United don't have, let's say, a kind of a left-footed replacement for Antony. Antony can't play every single game next season. And I think he's ready, personally. You know, he's played down Championship, very physical league, shown he's got great end product. They love him up there, don't they, in Teesside. And I think he would be, I think he's ready now to come back. And I was actually a little bit touch and go with him because I was thinking, we knew how talented he was. He played a few times under Ole and I was thinking, oh no. And he had a pretty poor loan, I think, at Rangers, or it wasn't great. I was thinking, oh no, like, is this one of those players that probably should have stayed at Atalanta and carried on his development and you know, has moved to United, stalled and almost ruined his progression. But I think, I think he's looking really good and I think I'd bring him back.
Yeah, I think when you look at these five players, Ahmed, Pelestri, Kovar, Hannibal and Mainoo, so sell, stay or loan. For me, it's stay, and adding to that, play. So let's stop all this. We haven't got depth lark now. You've got some kids who are really good. Start using them in the same way that I was pleading Garnacho to be used at the start of the season, because they are good enough.
Would you keep Mainoo? Would you not send them on loan?
No, but okay, you need some more ball playing in midfield. You need some more ball playing in midfield. You need a bit of a youth. You need some younger legs. We're talking about Casemiro being old. We're talking about Eriksen kind of coming back and not playing particularly well. And then we talk about Bruno having to play in the eight. You've got a box-to-box midfielder in Mainoo who could be a top talent. He is our Jude Bellingham. So do you get, did Birmingham, I know Birmingham lower down the pyramid, but did Birmingham say, oh, we'll loan him out to kind of get him minutes? No, you play him and you look at Mainoo and Mainoo is ready to play today. He's 18 now. He's just come from 17 to 18. He is ready. We could send him out on loan, Haydar, to a Championship club and he'd have a great season. But do you know what? We'll be having a conversation next year that Man United haven't got midfield depth. You've got these players. Keep them all. And play them all, put them in your rotation. I think one of the things, you look at Pelestri, I think Pelestri could have helped you more this season. What the managers ended up doing is pushing Bruno into wider roles, making sure that Bruno then doesn't play the 10. This is why I've moaned about that and said, well, why is Bruno not playing the 10? And every time I ask that question, people say, you hate Bruno Fernandes. I'm saying, no, the manager's not playing him.
Has been playing as well. Like, no, I'm much rather seeing Pelestri play a bit more.
Not my choice. So these five players specifically, let's just do them very quickly. Ahmed, I think at the end of the day, the loan has been brilliant for him at Sunderland. I think if Sunderland do win the playoffs and come up, up, then there is a conversation to be had about, do you give Ahmed a year as a Premier League player with Sunderland? That's a conversation you can have in the summer. But for me, bring him back, get him going. Palestri, again, a lot of loan talk with him, but I think he's good enough to play now. Not a lot of minutes, but certainly more than, say, Anthony Elanga or someone like that. Kovar, incredibly, you know, interesting young goalkeeper, 22 years old, 6'5", had a breakout season this year. We're talking about goalkeepers. Keep him. Don't have Butland. Don't have Heaton. Have Kovar. Hannibal now, another season out on loan, done well at Birmingham. Still kind of talking about what's his best position, but do you know what he is? He's a creative and he's got a nasty streak. I like that. Bring him in. But Kobi Manu, for me, he is good enough, Haydar, that in 12 months' time, he'll be in England squad. Oh, I lost my ears there. Apologies. Get that back. So you're getting too excited about Kobi Manu. We can clip that up. I think that, like again, we talk, don't we, a lot about, you think about when Jude Bellingham was on the market and obviously Manchester United wanted him and then they didn't sort that out. They didn't actually go and get him, did they? And now he's a £120 million footballer. I honestly believe Kobi Manu is going to be in that bracket. I think in a year or two or three, you have got a generational talent there who's from Stockport and loves Man United, and you need to give him a chance, just like Louis van Gaal gave Marcus Rashford a chance. It took Rashford years to get to where he is today, Haydar, but he's absolutely a top world-class player now, I would say, and he's earned those stripes. Give Manu the chance. Yeah, he might end up on loan, Haydar, but this is why you have a squad. If you don't use your squad, then it's on you, isn't it? And we know earlier in the season, the manager didn't want to rotate. And I think that's because he was getting to know the players. So that's understandable. But you could have done with the Kobi Manu in these last few weeks in the same way that you're thankful that Garnacho is now fit, because you need that 18-year-old boy. You need him back in your team. And he put the ball in the net yesterday. Otherwise, you struggle to get over the line. Kids can help you. All that rubbish about not being able to win with kids is utter rubbish. If the kid is good enough, give the kid a chance.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that when you actually list those five players out, United, that's five really good talents that United could be using in the squad. When you think about, for example, when I think of Manu, I look at some of the players, you know, you look at, for example, McTominay. I mean, I would rather be seeing Manu play a little bit more than McTominay. I think, you know,
exactly.
Move him on. Sabitzer, who I actually like, but, you know, do you sign Sabitzer who's going to be 29, nearly 30, or do you give Hannibal more minutes? And There was a question about Zidane Iqbal as well. Like, obviously, he had a really good preseason. Yep. You know, the United have got talent here. Kovar is a really interesting one. I was thinking about Kovar the other day, and I was thinking, you know, do you bring him back and just give him the opportunity and ask him to fight for that position with David De Gea?
Yeah.
Look, I don't know. It's a tough one. You know, does Ten Hag? You got to have the balance, right? You don't want to bring in too many young players because you want to have obviously supplement it with experience. But I think that because the squad isn't large, yeah, huge experience, but the age profile is actually quite old. You think about Rafa Varane, Casemiro approaching 30 as well. Ericsson's another one. They're approaching 30. So you know, we haven't got a young squad. You know, some of the players that Ten Hag has brought in are on the older side as well. So, and if Harry Kane comes in, you know, another player approaching 30. So you need maybe a bit more youth to supplement the squad. So I think it's an interesting conversation. Good question.
This is the point. Like you people talk about buying youth, buying 20-year-olds, 21-year-olds, 22-year-olds. Well, there's not really a lot of development difference in there. They've got a couple of years on some of these kids. The only question you need to ask, Haydar, with these five players is, are they good enough? That's just as simple as that. You know, are they good enough? Because if they're not good enough, then you get rid, don't you? You know, they can't help you. These 16, 17, 18, 19-year-olds, yeah, they look good maybe at youth level, but you move them on. Now, the manager might think that about some of these players. He might look at, I think, say someone like Hannibal like that and say, not quite sure if he fits what I want. Palestri, you've seen this year. Palestri's come into the team and I think way outperformed a lot of people's expectations. I think people thought that he was going to be your kind of Real Betis standard type player for forever, and that's the way you go, and you farm him off to Alaves or somewhere like that in Spain. That's what he can do. I don't believe that. I think that he is a standard that if he was at Wolves, I think someone like Palestri would be a starter every week. You know, and that's a Premier League team that want to be in the top 10.
Starts for Uruguay, doesn't he?
Like, starts for Uruguay.
Yeah, so
it's the same with Garnacho at the start of the season. There was a load of people saying that he wasn't ready, wasn't good enough, etc., etc. Yes, he is good enough. He is ready, but you've got to give him a chance. These five lads have all got the opportunity. I think if Kovar came back to United next season and De Gea did get injured and Kovar took the gloves, I'm not sure De Gea ever plays again. That's it. So that's the opportunity that you have to offer these young lads, the allure of the chance. But if they're not at the club, there's no chance, is there? So Ahmed's done well at Sunderland, but I want Ahmed in our team doing those things, putting the ball in the top corner. And then, yeah, you're right. Ahmed and Anthony, really nice balance. Take the pressure off Jaden. Jaden then doesn't have to be that player anymore. Jaden can find his own form in time because other players are doing it. I do believe in youth, and that's not just because I'm an old school Man United fan, you know, a legacy supporter or whatever you want to call it. I just think that's the smart way to build your squad. Yes, make signings for the first team, you know, Casemiro standard, etc. But when Casemiro has a bad game, Haydar, or is knackered, take Casemiro out and play Kobbie Mainoo. And that has to be the kind of thinking next season if Man United really want to go that next step. Look at Arsenal. Arsenal have done exactly that. Yeah, 2 years ago, no one would have said, maybe except Arsenal fans, that Saka would be at the level he's at. Martinelli, people used to say, oh, he's good, but, you know, will he? He's a striker. Is he a nine? Is he a wide player? These players have all proven that they can take that next step. Saliba, a year or two ago, people were like, no, never going to be Premier League standard. Maybe Arsenal should sell him. They're good enough. Stick with them and then buy players to supplement them. And then you've got a really good squad.
I agree. And that's a great way to end the show. So, Ken, thank you very much for that really good question. Guys, thank you for all your support. As always, hit the like button. Hit the subscribe button so we can get this up the algorithm as well. Rob, any last words before we wrap up?
No, look, 3 points you got. You now need 6 from 9. So you're one step closer. And it is going to be a little bit of a crawl. And you're going to have to play these games a little bit like a game of chess. Be patient. Get what you can get. If you win these games 1-0, 1-0, 1-0, so be it. That's okay. You might even lose one of these games. But as long as you make sure that you get the 6 points you need. Because if we come below Liverpool this season, I don't even want to sit in front of this camera and do that show. I really don't. I really, really don't. Because you don't deserve it either. You deserve to be top four this season. Now go take what you deserve. Go show that you're worthy of it and that you're not a bunch of bottlers, because you've shown at times you do bottle stuff, but I don't believe that's how they're thinking. And you might just need the effervescence of a Garnacho to be the difference maker. Let's hope Marcus is fit for the next game. We're not sure about that. That's a bit touch and go. And I think that you just need to put out your best team. That's what I keep saying. Now, forget tiredness. Put your best 11 out there. Try and do the job.
100%. Thank you guys for listening, and we'll see you all next time.